Stand for the rights, please. Parties and counsel identify themselves for the court and the record, please.
I am Walter Tuvel. I am the plaintiff.
My name is Jack Marshall. I am the defendant and also a Massachusetts attorney. I'm representing myself pro se.
All right. And Mr. Tuvel, I take it you're representing yourself.
I am.
All right. Okay, so I have read the complaint. I've read the moving papers. I'll hear from the moving party. I might have some questions, but at the outset, I'll let you each say your piece. I will tell you the couple, this probably is not surprising, but whatever else you'd like to say, I'd like to hear about two things. The first is opinion, what your positions are on what portions of these alleged defamatory statements, if any, are opinion and therefore generally not actionable. And the other issue is the forum, whether it makes a difference what forum this occurs in. Reading the Hornbook, I see that it has to discredit the plaintiff in a considerable and respectable class of the community. This is a hypothetical question. If there was a forum that it was known that there was only two members of, for instance, just to take an extreme example, that might really raise a question. If I heard that this particular forum is one where there's 10,000 known users, I'd push that issue to the side. But I think it's worth discussing. But the bigger issue is opinion, so I'll hear from you on all matters, but especially those two, so the moving party can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. This episode came as a result of the fact that the plaintiff, I think, had his feelings hurt on an exchange and on a ethics blog that I have maintained for over 9 years. The defamation suit, I am making a motion to dismiss with prejudice, and a motion, if that is granted, to award costs. I have four basic arguments, but in the interest of time, I will concentrate primarily on two. The first is that the lawsuit was premature and unnecessary and did not follow, as my understanding, a Massachusetts procedure. I never received a demand letter, as I understand is required by Chapter 93A, and that's more as a result. I did not even open the initial package I got from the plaintiff because it was not sent registered mail. I did not even know it was a lawsuit, so I was totally surprised. As a result, I was behind the eight ball. It came at a tough time. And by the way, I want to apologize to Your Honor and also to the plaintiff. There were, in reviewing my response, there were a lot of typos, and I'm a lousy typist and a bad proofreader, and I apologize. I am usually better than that, and I hope you will grant that apology. That's not a mere technical flaw. I've maintained a website and a blog for close to 20 years. In that time, I have had five instances. I've written well over 9,000 posts. I've had five instances where someone contacted me and claimed to be defamed or otherwise harmed by the post. Prior to Mr. Tuvel, the other four, in three of them, I contacted the individual and took down the part of the post that upset them. In the fourth, I felt I was being basically bluffed and extorted by someone, refused to do it, and indeed they did not go forward. Had I received a demand letter, in all likelihood, we would not be here today. So that's a threshold issue. The other three is that all of the claims of libel, defamation in the plaintiff's complaint, by all of my research and what I knew about this prior, because I had done some work in this area, are not defamatory as a matter of fact and law. Third, the plaintiff not only didn't try to mitigate damages, but actually put a link to my blog where we had this exchange on his own website and discussed the matter on his own website, thus increasing whatever circulation that he claimed was harmful to him. And finally, that his claim of damages is not only speculative but unsupportable. But if we just focus on your main issue, which is opinion, and whether any of these are in fact defamation, there are 33 separate instances of defamation in the complaint. According to Lyons v. Globe newspaper, which is a 1993 case, quoting a 1983 case, says to determine whether or not a statement is opinion, a court must examine the statement in its totality and the context in which it was uttered or published. The court must consider all the words used and must give weight to cautionary terms used by the person publishing the statement. Finally, the court must consider all of the circumstances surrounding the statement. By that methodology, it would be hard to find a set of statements that had been more definitively stated as opinion. First of all, my blog, both in the about section, which is at the top of the page, and in the section that is guidance to commenters, makes it clear. It says right up front that this is an opinion blog, that I am uttering my opinion that is out here for discussion purposes. So everything that is in there, at least, is covered by that. And that the plaintiff said in the course of our discussion that he had, in fact, read these statements. But to the next level, in the primary post, in which virtually, not quite all, but all of the virtually all of the offending statements were made, I said at the beginning of it, in that statement, I said, now this is an opinion, Walt, not an assertion of fact, you can't sue me. I framed the entire thing that way. That underneath an overarching statement officially taken by the blog, all blog users, that this is my opinion. Now, of the 33, I broke all of them down into five different areas. And I'll do this quickly. I'm not going to run through all of the 33 individually unless you want me to. I'll just give an example. Five of them were things that had nothing to do with libel or defamation under any interpretation, such as I banned him from the blog as a result of what I considered disruptive and insulting comments. The plaintiff argued that banning him from my blog, Ethics Alarms, was defamatory. Nothing defamatory about telling somebody they can't comment on the blog anymore. That's simply an administrative act that I have every right to do. I have blocked probably 20 or 30 people over the 9 years I've run the blog. There are three examples of statements, though likely false, could not reasonably be considered offensive to the average person in the community. An example of that, a plaintiff claimed that the post mistakenly referring to him as an academic, a mistake I immediately apologized for, constituted an intentional slur and was defamatory. I am not aware, although I have my own opinions about academics, I'm not aware that that is a defamatory statement. Statements of opinion based upon disclosed facts. Every statement made in this exchange was based on either the plaintiff's own website, which had a link included, or his own statements. There were no undisclosed facts that anything was being based on. So, for example, here there were, 11 of those statements. I said, characterizing his website, the reason Walt is, this is a quote, the reason Walt is interested in judicial misconduct is that the judge decided his case was lousy. That was my characterization and my belief. And anyone who wanted to check it out could check it out and could disagree with it if they chose. The fourth category is unrefuted statements of fact. from Yoy v. Nugent, which is a 2003 case, do not provide a basis for defamation cause of action. I said in the course of banning Walt, this is the first time, however, that someone has abused Ethics Alarms for a personal agenda. I believe that is true, and that is why he was banned. The personal agenda had to do with the fact that he contacted me and said, why don't you ever write about judicial misconduct? I said, I have I checked. I have maybe 30, 40 posts about judicial ethics. I lecture on judicial ethics. I'm interested in judicial ethics. As it turned out, and I was not aware of this as he came on, he has a website that much of which is devoted to his own case that a Massachusetts judge, this would be Denise Jefferson Casper, United States District Judge of the United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts, engaged in judicial misconduct by dismissing his case. When I found out that that had been the effort that he was, I felt, slyly trying to get me to give my opinion on without me knowing it, I felt that I had been sandbagged. I said I had been sandbagged, and I got angry. One of the reasons I was angry is, you know, I teach legal ethics. In fact, I do part of the legal ethics introduction for the new admittees to the Massachusetts Bar every other month. Massachusetts is one of the jurisdictions that has Rule 8.2, which makes it unethical for a lawyer to make a statement that the lawyer knows to be false or with reckless disregard as to its truth or falsity concerning the qualifications or integrity of a judge or a magistrate. Now, if I had a website like Mr. Tavell's, I believe that would be a violation of Rule 8.2. And I felt it would be, I felt that I was being sort of tricked into giving opinions that would in fact enable this activity. And so, yes, I did indeed get angry at that. I said this is the first time someone has abused ethics norms for a personal agenda. It was the first time. Five, and there are seven of these, I'm not proud of this, insult, but an opinion is not defamation. There are at least seven examples where I would confess to insulting Mr. Tavell. In my comment guidelines, I say there will be times that I sometimes will be unduly harsh with a commenter. Under those circumstances, people should call it to my attention, and I will often apologize or retract the statement. It's a freewheeling blog. It's a forum for discussion. I moderate it carefully, but we discuss very, very emotional issues on everything from abortion to war to Donald Trump. People get hot. People make accusations. And an interest, frankly, in not censoring everything, I participate in the discussion. So here, one of the seven insults was, I have already spammed two more posts by the jerk. There is multiple cases in Massachusetts that basically say characterizations such as jerk and others are not defamation. They are clearly opinion and they are insult. And that is, that's the law pretty much everywhere that I could find. And finally, inaccuracy. The quote is, inaccuracy by itself does not make a defamatory statement or hold one up to contempt, hatred, scorn, or ridicule, or tend to impair his standing in the community. There were three episodes of those. And that's the whole group. This is a debate forum. It is clear, it is stated up front that it's a forum for freewheeling opinion. The commenters frequently criticize each other and are often harsh with each other, although I do moderate it to keep it from being abusive on the basis of race, religion, sexual orientation, gender, etc. And sometimes if I am sufficiently annoyed by, especially by accusations of bias, which is what I felt Mr. Tavell was doing over and over again, I may get harsh as well. So I announced that I was banning him from the blog, and you can see the offending paragraph where I said, and here's why, because I never ban anyone without explaining why. That was the section in which I said, now this is all my opinion and analysis, and I said that up front. I feel as if it's not really necessary to get into a lot of the attendant details, because literally the 33 instances of supposed defamation that are being claimed, by no set of law or research that I have done, and I handled another defamation case many years ago, could possibly qualify, I don't think, as defamation. So on the basis of that, I'm asking for a dismissal.
Just a couple questions. The plaintiff attached to the opposition 34 pages of blog posts, and my question is there an agreement that this is the entire scope? It appears to me to include everything. I'm just wondering if you've had a chance to review it. I'm wondering if I can categorize it as undisputed that the communications that we're talking about are this
the various comments
1 through 34 that are attached to the defendants. Have you had a chance to look at it?
I haven't, but I'll stipulate to that.
Let me just take a short break and ask, is that what this is? Am I reading that correctly? Is it sort of the whole string as opposed to excerpts or anything?
It is indeed. It was that blog post was started on a single day. It continued into the next 2 or 3 days. All the contents are indeed right there in that Exhibit A, 34 pages that you are referring to. You asked if that's all there was to it. The short answer is, as opposed to the bare facts, yes. As opposed to everything else we're arguing about here, obviously. Right.
I'm going to give you a chance in 1 second. I have one other question, and this might be an academic question. I hesitate to use the term, but
we're making law here, maybe.
Academic question. What difference does it make the forum? When you set forth the rules, whether people read them or not, if a blog location sets forth rules and generally speaking tell the users this is opinion, it might get rough, however you put it, does that matter in the defamation world as opposed to it sounds different than newspapers, but tell me if you think is it as simple that you said at the very beginning, you know, take all facts and circumstances into account to determine if something is defamatory? Maybe it's that simple. I'm wondering if there's any law that talks about when the ground rules are set by a particular forum that it matters.
I have not. I've researched it. Blogs, as you know, are making this issue is sort of a little bit of a gray area because we're just getting sort of trying to decide what's going on here. However, I would argue that a forum that is laid out specifically, you can't defame someone in court. The same in an oral argument. The same thing applies to the blog. The blog is framed as you enter this voluntarily. It's an opinion forum. You have the option, by the way, on my blog of having a screen name and keeping your own name out of the public, as long as I know who it is. So this is why I have such an extensive set of disclaimers and explanations at the beginning of the blog to make it clear that nobody comes here under any misconception. So I think yes, I think the forum, does matter. I chose not even to get into the issue, which is still a live one about whether. The degree to which various First Amendment protections apply to publications like my blog, which has had, I think, I just passed the 9 million visitor mark after 9 years. However, to address a question you asked previously, since it's an ethics blog, it has a very narrow audience, and I can determine eventually, right now I have not been able to, exactly how many people actually viewed this post. As of this moment, I know it is less than 400, probably close to 250, spread all over the usership of the blog, which is international, and fewer than 25 people, I think fewer than 30 people, have actually commented. And I would presume that those who have commented on the blog are the ones who are most likely to have seen the exchange that the plaintiff is complaining about. So we're talking about a tiny percentage of people outside of the community that might have, in fact, seen this, even if it were defamatory, which it is not.
All right. Thank you. Let me hear from the plaintiff and... I'll say the same thing I said at the beginning. I'm happy to hear you on all matters. I'm particularly interested in your views with respect to opinion and what we were just discussing about the forum and whether it makes a difference. So,
thank you, Your Honor. So as to forum, let me just do that first since it's hot on the floor right now. He just said he's had more than 9 million users. He did indeed post that on his blog in the last few days. I saw it. I don't frequent his blog anymore, but 9 million users, his actual language he just now said in open court, that says it's a pretty big blog. Okay, so that's the end of that story as far as size of forum goes. As far as composition of forum goes, yes, he's interested in people interested in ethics. He advertises it largely as legal ethics, but really he covers a lot more than just that. And his about page specifically says nothing that he's going to focus on legal ethics. He does, you know, he's got a side business. I guess it's his main business, actually, on legal ethics. This blog is separate from his business, by the way. He's got a different business called ProEthics. That's a separate, it has a separate website, and it's a separate business from this blog we're talking about. Continuing with the idea of composition of forum, I myself have a website. It's not a blog. You know, if we get into technicalities of what's a blog, what's a forum, what it is a website, and it's devoted to judicial misconduct. So anyone who was seeing both of those would all of a sudden say, because of what he's saying there about falsehoods, about my what I will now call vocation. This is the main thing that I put my time into right now. My vocation, if you wish, I would be pleased if this court ruled me a limited purpose public figure because I have that blog. I'm associated to judicial misconduct research, and he has totally impugned that. Okay, so there goes, you know, reputation damage. So that's what I have to say at the moment about size of forum and composition of forum.
All right.
In particular, on his point that he's just mentioned quite recently about his, I think it's his about either his about page or his rules page or something. He talks about it consists of his opinion. Calling something an opinion does not make it an opinion. There is absolutely no rule that ever says that, and everything that has ever been printed in every case anywhere in any jurisdiction says. Call something an opinion and then go ahead and make a statement of fact about it does not make that an opinion, period. So we know that that's true. What would have made a difference had he published it on his website is if he would have said, this website is a satirical one, which means I'm going to actively say crazy stuff here and I don't expect anyone to believe it. Okay, there are big arguments nowadays on the internet about, you know, from very fact-checking websites, Snopes and, you know, several others, they'd say, yeah, we've heard on the internet somebody's saying such and such, but guess what? That was first published on a satirical website. You can't believe anything they say. He did not say that. He does say he believes on his about page or whatever it was. He believes everything he writes. Okay, even though he says it's going to be opinion, he explicitly writes on that very same page, I believe everything I write. Okay, now, that's what I have to say a little bit about opinion versus fact. I'm sorry, at least about opinion. Now, as to fact, obviously, in my whole complaint and everything else I've written here, I don't complain about his opinions at all. Every single one of them is a fact problem. Now, he gave a list of 33, he claims, I haven't actually counted. Maybe it is 33. I do have here a list of five, what I would call the five top defamations, and they are all fact-based, not opinion-based. And I'll read those in just a moment. Or I could do it right now. But I just wanted to get that out. That's why I say about fact versus opinion. I know the difference. I know the difference in defamation law in particular. Just to be clear here, we're talking libel. There have been once or twice that he talks about other types of defamation. This is totally liable, so it's all written, as we just agreed to, or at least I just stipulated, the 34-page appendix you have there, I think covers, 99% of everything. Okay. There's two orders in which I could do things here. I could go down, I just said I had a list of five things here, and I could go down those, and I will in a moment, but what might be better is since some of these ideas are hot on the floor that he was just talking about, and I made notes on them, let me briefly mention those.
However you'd like to proceed.
Thank you. He mentioned something about the Chapter 93 demand letter. That is ridiculous. That has to do with commercial law, consumer protection. This is not such a case. This is a straight defamation tort. I don't know where he's pulling that from. It's got zero substance with this court, with this case.
Right, so I'm not going to decide that. I'm not going to decide the motion to dismiss based on 93A demand letters because it's a defamation lawsuit. So,
okay. Perfect. He mentioned registered that I didn't send it registered mail. There is no rule to send anything by registered mail in this jurisdiction. I did send it by U.S. certified mail, which is the accepted way to do it.
I'm not gonna rule on the motion based on the form of mail either.
Okay.
So the ruling in this case is likely to revolve around the issues we were just discussing. Opinion.
Great. But he just put
defamation, damages, that type of thing. Go ahead.
I'm just saying he put it out on the floor. I need to mention these just to cover my
I'm just letting you know.
He mentioned mitigation of damages. That's also got nothing to do with this hearing. This hearing is a Rule 12. It's got nothing to do with a mitigation of damages.
Well, you do have to allege damages, though. Have you done that?
I absolutely have, sir. In my complaint.
Damages to reputation. I think you have. I just wanted to say that's the relevance for the motion to dismiss is you do have to allege damages.
And I really appreciate the comment you just made because this is a Rule 12 hearing. So what we're talking about here is whether or not I have alleged, claimed, injury on which a reasonable jury. Let's be careful here. We're asking whether or not there may reasonably exist evidence that what I claimed could cause a reasonable jury to rule that I was defamed. Okay. So all of his stuff that he's talking about, facts, have nothing to do with a Rule 12 hearing. It's whether I pled the facts. And I did. Okay. Just want to make sure that that's understood here. He says that the judge in this other case decided my case was lousy. That is false because she did not decide on, quote, my case. What she did is she did indeed dismiss the case on summary judgment, but she falsely did so because she did not listen to the plaintiff's statement of facts. She explicitly said in her ruling where she dismissed the case, she said, I am going to listen only to the defendant's statement of facts. The defendant here was IBM, by the way. I was the plaintiff. Okay? That is illegal. That is judicial misconduct. That's the basis of my judicial misconduct complaints about that case. So when he said the judge ruled that my case was lousy, that is false.
Let me ask you a different question about that, though, because just the use of the term lousy has the ring of opinion.
It does indeed, except for the fact that in this case, he was talking about my website claiming something, one thing, and then he basically saying that I was false in what I was saying. I said that she ruled on it. He said that she ruled on my case. She ruled on a case that she invented the facts about. So it's not loud. You're right. Just the word loud. Okay, insults. I have no problem with insults. Mm-hmm. He mentioned before he called me an asshole. I don't care about that. I don't care about the word lousy. I don't care about anything. None of those are in my complaint. None of those are any of the 33 of my complaint. What I do have in a number of places is to say things which may, how should I say it, in the language of Cardinal Richelieu, the famous six lines aphorism. So it may, if you extract them out of context, a few little words might look like an opinion. But in the context of everything, these things are not opinion. And in fact, the cases say, and the law reviews all say what's really going on here is the contextual implication of defamation. So if somebody says the case is lousy, the word lousy, I don't care. That's nothing. It's a word. To say my whole case and my whole website are lousy, that is defamatorily impugning a whole set of facts over here in context that makes that word lousy much more than just the word lousy. Okay? All right. I have citations to all this in my filings. He says that he writes about judicial misconduct. So my website is called judicialmisconduct.us. He says on his website, oh, he's talked about judicial misconduct 30-some-odd times. That is false. He has talked about judicial ethics in a few places, which is totally separate from judicial misconduct. Judicial misconduct is ruled by, you know, 28 U.S.
Well, this one jumps out at me as proving something false for the sake of proving something false. If, in describing his own website, Mr. Marshall overstated the truth. I wrote on judicial ethics 30 or 40 times, and it turns out it's 10 or 20. Okay. How does that hurt you? Because all of this has to hurt you.
Absolutely. He does not address judicial misconduct on his site one single time, insofar as I am able to find.
Same question, though. If he...
Because he
tells the world incorrectly how many times he's written on a topic, how does that hurt you?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're right, it doesn't. That in itself does not hurt me. His fact of saying here he wrote about it 30-some-odd times, that doesn't affect me at all, and I don't care about that. What I do care about is that he's pretending that what he's written about applies to me, and it doesn't. So he's saying false things, which by context say that that what I write on my website is false, or in my lawsuit is false.
Okay.
This is a fine point. I'm willing to drop the point. I admit, for him to say anything about, you know, how many millions of times he's written about judicial anything makes no difference. But just to point out that he doesn't know what he's talking about. What he's talking about is judicial ethics, which I, you know, am not interested in. I'm interested in strictly judicial misconduct. You know, the whole judicial misconduct proceedings through, in the case of the federal courts, which is what that case is in. It goes through the Judicial Council and the Judicial Conference, which is where I'm at right now. That is a known quantity. A lawyer should know that. Instead, he pretends that writing about judicial ethics has something to do with these judicial misconduct proceedings. So
let me just interrupt again, because when I go through the complaint to determine whether your allegations allege defamatory conduct, defamatory words, that I'm going to put each one of the statements through a filter, and the last step of that filter is causes harm to you. So if you're talking about things that another person says that then don't cause harm to you, that's why I use the term, it's like proving things false for the sake of proving things false. The cause of action here is defamation. It's got to hurt you. So I just want you to know that I'm going to have a bunch of things. It has to be false, not opinion, causes harm to you. There might be a couple other things. But I'm going to go through the complaint. This is basically what the defendant asks me to do. I'm going to go through the complaint, and I'm going to put every, you know, set of allegations through those filters, and they have to satisfy all of those standards. So I just say the ones that happen, if you happen to be saying that he's misstating himself, unless it hurts you, that's not actionable unless I need to be educated on a different type of law.
Good. Now that you've explained it better to me, I had time to think while you were saying that, and I can say yes, indeed, it did harm me, because on his website, you know, he is more or less God, let's just put it that way. So all of the readers there believe him. Most of them are in his pocket. They totally agree with everything he says. So when he says he writes about judicial misconduct and he knows everything about it, then they're going to trust him when he goes back and says, oh, and Walt Tavell's case is lousy. Okay? That is defamatory implication in context. Okay. So I think that's the best I can say about that.
Okay.
Fine. I've mentioned, so that's what I have notes from what he said. I mentioned that I have a list of five.
I heard of a category of five from Mr. Marshall, and I'll hear your category of five, and I'll see which one.
It's a different five.
Okay, I figured, so go ahead.
Well, by different five, I meant that he also talked about 33 claims of injury in my complaint. So I'm going to boil those down to five top runners. So the five top defamations, totally different from his point of five things, okay? And so here they are. First of all, theft of professional services, accusation. So I didn't actually steal anything because he never produced any professional services for me that I ever used. But he certainly accused me of attempting to steal professional services from him. He very explicitly says that I was trying to get something for free off of him. And that in doing so, I had a secret personal agenda and that I was dishonest. That is a statement of fact. His statement of fact is that I tried to get something free off of him that had value. That's a statement of fact saying I'm a thief, or in this case, just an attempted thief. That's not an opinion. That is not an opinion. It's a statement of fact, period. And we can look at the actual language.
Is it opinion if he discloses the basis for his view? There's some case law that says opinions based on disclosed facts or non-defamatory facts, you can sort of prove them to be opinion.
You're absolutely right, provided that the facts that are based on this utterance that we're debating, whether it's an opinion or fact, that the basis of that is true, but it's not. In this case, it's false. So he says, Walt did a bunch of stuff over here. All of that would happen to be false, factually false. And then he says, and that convinces me that he tried to steal, theft of professional services, okay? So in that case, you know, that answers your question. It was, this is the contextual, context, mm-hmm. defamatory implication, again, context.
I want to hear your five categories, and I mentioned there's a group waiting for a 3 o'clock hearing that's been very patient. So I want to hear your five categories and give you a couple more minutes.
I'll speed up.
Thanks.
Number two, he said that I chose, as opposed to anybody else on that website, chose the precise divisive issue or subthread of left versus right, and that my comments were bitching, is his language there. That is false. Now, first of all, that is a statement of fact. That's not an opinion. That's a statement of fact. Except maybe the bitching comments. That's just an insult. I don't care about that. But to say that I'm the one that started the thread of this, all this stuff, that's false. That's not true. I wrote him on the side, before any of this website came up, a question about the purpose of his website versus the about page or whatever, the design purpose versus the implementation. That was separate. But on his website, per se, I only ever said, look at my judicial misconduct complaints. That's what I want to talk about. And it was others on the website that picked that up and ran with it and said, oh, he's an academic. Oh, he's, they think academics are pro-left wing, but the whole website is pro-right wing or something crazy. I didn't start that. It was false. It's a false statement of fact to say that I started that thread, period. Number three, he calls my website a single-issue website. Now, in the context of everything that's written here, what he means is the following. So I have a website. It's called judicialmisconduct.us. It is a platform, is the way they say it in the Internet nowadays, a platform or a framework for people to complain about judicial misconduct. He is saying that it's not that at all. He explicitly says, that's not what Mr. Tuvel's website is about. It is instead about his particular case, Tuvel versus IBM. That is false. So he made a statement of fact. It was a single-issue website. That is false. Right now there's at least five cases on there, and it goes into other stuff too. But statement of fact, false. He impugned the website. He impugned my integrity of saying what I do now is really my vocation, so to speak. Okay. Number four, sandbagging. He claims that I said a certain thing that misled him, and then I turned around and jumped and said something different. It's a little hard to tell, but that is totally false. By him saying that I said a certain thing that misled him, I did not say that certain thing that he just got done saying that had misled him, okay? Totally false. The word sandbagging, I don't care about. But for him to say, as he says in number five, that I secretly, dishonestly misled him about what I was interested in, that is false. The record proves it. Those 34 pages. Last. His banning me from his website and saying that I was the first time anyone abused ethics alarms, that's the name of his website, for my personal agenda, okay? I totally agree. He owns the website. He can ban anybody he wants. However, this is the perfect example of contextual defamatory implication. Yes, you can ban me. But to say that the reason you banned me is this, you know, my paragraph 14 there with all of these points in there, that's what he was relying on. All those points were false. Okay? The point being, so why do I, since it's already been talked about that they're false, why am I raising the banning is a big deal? Because that's the kiss of death on the internet. And if you get banned from something, you're automatically thought to be, oh, a terrible person. Remember all these people reading his website? 9 million users, as he just said a few moments ago? Okay. All of a sudden, that's defaming me. And falsely. I did not do anything for personal agenda here. By personal agenda, by the way, he means this business about theft of professional services in this context. Just read it, so I said. My personal agenda was, hey, Jack, this would be great for you to write about ethics alarms on your website because here's a judge lying about a case. She picked this case as summary judgment where by rule and by law, the judge has to automatically credit, without thinking, the plaintiff's statement of facts. Instead, she writes in black and white, I am crediting the defendant's statement of facts. That's something that a lawyer should care about. Last point, he mentioned Mass Rules of Professional Conduct 8A. I think he should, or 8, what are we called? It's 8, 8 something.
It's
8.2.
8.2,
right. I think he should have quoted Mass Rules of Professional Conduct 8.3. And I quote it right here. It's the last thing I'll say. A lawyer who knows that a judge has committed a violation of applicable rules of judicial conduct that raises a substantial question as to the judge's fitness for office, office here me being a judge, shall inform the appropriate authority. My proof of that is a little snippet out of her decision. I call it the smoking gun. It's published on my website. I pointed him explicitly to it, which proves that she explicitly says, I, the judge, at summary judgment, am going to credit only the defendant's statement of facts, not the plaintiff's. 8.3.
All right.
Your Honor?
Mr. Marshall, if you want 60 seconds to respond, I'll give you 60 seconds.
All right, 60 seconds. I have had 9 million users, views, not users. The users are much, oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. I was feeling faint. The users are much smaller than that. I have 2,000 people who officially follow my website every day, so that is just, you know, that's just wrong. Basically, I don't know how to, as far as I can see, that monologue basically supports what I've been saying. I mean, essentially what the plaintiff is saying is opinion is fact. Opinion's not fact. It's opinion's not fact when anyone else is free to look at all the evidence, every bit of evidence in which I said, from what I saw of the website, this is a single issue website. That's not a statement of fact. That's
so
my analysis.
So you would say that when you, one of the things about the internet where it's so easy to link to things is that when you state what you say is an opinion and then
link to the
basis for that statement, it's almost free from being defamatory because any reader can exercise their own mind to see if they agree with your statement or not.
That's correct. They can come back and say he's wrong. He's full of junk. But that, nonetheless, it's still an opinion. The stealing professional, basically my statement was that I was brought into the plaintiff's ambit by a suggestion that why don't I look into more judicial misconduct? As a matter of fact,
Your Honor, I think I've written more than 40 or 50 pieces about judicial ethics and judicial misconduct. And I have to say, I don't understand the argument that judicial misconduct and judicial ethics are completely different at all. I mean, you know, I teach this stuff. Judicial misconduct is a breach of the canons. It's judicial ethics. I don't understand the argument. And as far as the insults concerned, every single item that I listed and rebutted in my complaint were taken directly off of the original complaint. So I don't know what Mr. Tavell is talking about there, and that's more than my 60 seconds. But I think it's pretty clear that these are all opinions being represented as facts.
All right. So I'm going to take the matter under advisement. These things usually take a week or two. And you should expect a decision from me in the next couple weeks. And I appreciate your arguments. You'll hear from me soon.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Yes?
Judge, would you entertain further business at this moment? It's not a lot. What it is, is he recently, this week, put in a motion for costs. I have an opposition to that. I have filed it downstairs earlier today.
I'm going to rule on costs on the papers. I don't need to hear argument on it.
Fine.
So if you've submitted something, I will be sure to look at it before I make a decision.
Fine. The other thing I made a motion on just today, motion with memo, is that I would like him to communicate by email with me. He has blocked me. He refuses to communicate by email. For example, I would like to have PDF copies of his filings so I can do a search and do an easy quote, stuff like that. He refuses to give that to me. I've tried to give it to him. He refuses.
So you've asked for that permission?
I haven't.
In your motion?
It's a motion
right.
In your
I will consider it when it reaches my desk, which is usually a little while. Okay. Good. Thank you. And you should expect a decision in the next couple weeks. Other than those motions you just mentioned that are already on file, typically while a motion to dismiss is pending, I don't expect there to be other action in the case so that you get a decision on this motion first, okay?
Thank you.
I do understand that, but I want to cover my bases because you just said typically, so I don't think what you just said is a rule, and I don't know your particular operating style. That's why I filed the motions.
Yeah, I'm saying the things that are already filed, that's fine.
Okay.
And now I'm saying, okay, so I'll be more explicit. While the motion to dismiss is pending, other than the things that are already filed, I don't want any discovery or other motions in the case.
Totally agree. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can.